Support for this podcast comes from the Peabody Essex Museum, presenting Ethiopia at the Crossroads. On view now. Find out more about the exhibition at PEM.org.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, and this is On Point.
Here's Bregman into left center field. Back at the wall and gone. Forget the tie. It's 6-5.
The American League won last night's All-Star game, beating the National League 8-6 in extra innings. The game showcased baseball's new style. Lots of home runs, including that one by Alex Bregman. Lots of strikeouts in a contest that lasted well into the night. And while several Major League Baseball teams, from Boston to Houston to Los Angeles, are thriving of late, the sport of baseball is not. Attendance is down. Young people are staying away, calling it too slow and boring. And who could afford the tickets, by the way, not to mention the $10 beers? This hour, On Point, what ails the great American pastime? You can join the conversation on air or online. How much have you been following baseball this season? Did you enjoy last night's All-Star game? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And joining me now from Washington is John Taylor, baseball writer for Sports Illustrated. He was at last night's All-Star game and the home run derby on Tuesday. John, welcome to On Point. Really glad to have you.
Thanks, Anthony. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. So, unfortunately, I didn't watch the All-Star game last night. I have to go to bed early to do this show, but I read about it. I wished I had watched it. Give us the highlights. What did you like about it?
Home runs, more home runs, like an extension of the home run derby. It seemed like it never ended. We had a record 10, it was, I believe, last night, including what felt like all of them in the last two innings or so. A lot of strikeouts, as you mentioned, and a lot of walks. So really, in a sense, it was a kind of a perfect encapsulation of what baseball is in the year 2018. Home runs, walks, strikeouts, balls not being put in play. Pitchers throwing 95-plus miles per hour with pretty much every offering. Super hard-throwing relievers. I mean, that's pretty much... It's funny that you have an All-Star game that kind of just so neatly stands for the era in which we live, but that's pretty much what we had last night.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of sound. So, as we mentioned, a record home run, 10 home runs were hit in last night's All-Star game. That surpasses the previous record of 6. The game included these shots from Mike Trout, Scooter Gennett, and Alex Bregman.
Nobody on, and that is hit by gone. Trout into left. It is gone. Here's one into right. Back at the wall. Here's Bregman into left center field. Back at the wall and gone.
And gone. And we could have done 7 more, but you get the point. So John Taylor, I mean, home runs are a great thing. Isn't this what we go to the ball game to see? Because I detected a little bit of weariness in your voice about describing all these home runs.
I don't want to call it weariness, but at a certain point, you do start to kind of wonder, where are all the other balls in play? You know, batting average as it currently stands, I believe, is on pace to be one of the lowest we've seen since the late 1960s when the league had to lower the mound in order to bring offense levels back up. You know, and we're talking about pre-DH times there, too. Singles are down. Pretty much everything is down. And so at a certain point, I love home runs. You know, they are the most exciting thing, at least in most cases, that can happen on a baseball field. But it does kind of become a little bit of a sensory overload when they just happen so often. When you have so many guys cranking out 20 in a season. I mean, one of the guys who homered last night, Scooter Gennett, 2 years ago, he was a totally nondescript, completely unfamous utility infielder for, you know, bouncing around bad teams. Now all of a sudden he's the kind of guy who can hit 20 to 25 home runs in a season, and while that's pretty cool, honestly, for a guy like Scooter Gennett, it is just kind of indicative of just how easy it's become to hit a home run nowadays, due in part, I imagine, to all the monkeying that Major League Baseball has likely done with the baseballs that's kind of helped precede this this big rise in home runs over the last two seasons.
Now. Yeah. And John, at the same time, and last night was indicative of that as well, we've got a game where pitchers are throwing a lot of strikeouts, lots and lots of strikeouts. So lots of home runs, lots of strikeouts. As you mentioned, that means fewer balls in play. But what's the effect of all those strikeouts? Because again, this is something that traditionally, I mean, I remember the days of going to Fenway Park and seeing Pedro Martinez rack up those K's on the center field bleachers. People would put up those K signs. It was very, very exciting. But too many of those as well, maybe.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, I also grew up a Red Sox fan, and I very fondly remember all the strikeouts that Pedro Martinez would pile up in his prime. His 17 strikeout game against the Yankees in 1999 is one of the great pitching performances of all time. But again, like home runs, you get it's almost too much of a good thing at a certain point. When everyone can throw 95-plus, when everyone can rack up strikeouts, it does get a little kind of dull, especially when you just go long stretches of time. I know last night there was a good 5 or 6-batter stretch at one point where literally no one put the ball in play. It was, I think, 5 strikeouts on a walk all in a row. And that can get a little dull if you're watching because you're not really seeing anything happen, especially because the odds of anything good actually happening one way or the other when it's all strikeouts and walks is pretty negligible. I mean, you put the ball in play, like, no one wants to hit weak ground balls or pop-ups or anything like that. Those don't do anything for anybody, and it's not like those are more interesting to watch necessarily. But the ball in play does lead to hits, of course, in a way that strikeouts and walks do not. And, of course, it makes defense do things. And I noted that last night, that we didn't really get any great or good defensive plays last night simply because there weren't any opportunities for that to happen, which is also, I guess you could say, a little bit dull as well.
Yeah, I agree. That's a real shame as someone who loves the defensive side of baseball. So, John, one more question before I let you go, and that is looking forward toward the second half of this season. We've got 4 teams, the New York Yankees, Boston Red Sox, Houston Astros, and the Seattle Mariners. They're all on pace to win more than 100 games, which would also be a major league record. There are 6 teams, including the Baltimore Orioles, the Royals, the White Sox, the Reds, the Marlins, and the Texas Rangers, with winning percentages below 400. So talk about that. I mean, this kind of mismatch between the truly great teams and a whole bunch of teams not so great.
It's not surprising that we have a league that's kind of increasingly polarized and divided into the super elite and the super bad. When you have teams so willing to do things like not spend money in the offseason, put themselves onto 3 to 5 year rebuilding plans where they're simply not competitive on purpose, and when you have a league in a commissioner's office that is more or less entirely okay with this. This is kind of the end result of a league that embraces tanking, as the commissioner doesn't want you to call it a tanking, but tanking is what it is, as a viable strategy toward building a contender. And the truth is it works sometimes. You know, the Cubs, you could argue about for the Cubs and the Astros got to where they are by embracing that, but that's not entirely accurate. And then you look at teams like the Reds, who've been tanking for pretty much 4.5 years at this point and are still a bad team and don't really have any visions of being better in the future. So to me, you know, the way things played out this offseason, with the way teams refused to sign free agents, that there were so few teams that actually seemed interested in getting better or in contending, it's not really a surprise that we're in a position now kind of similar to where the NBA is, where you have this concentration of super teams. You know, like, you know, Boston and New York are both on pace to win more than 105 games. Houston's having its best season in franchise history. And on the other half, you have all these bottom feeders who are all just vying for better draft picks. And, you know, that this is the result, that doesn't necessarily surprise me. It is a bummer, though, because the last thing you want to see, especially if you're a fan of any of those teams, is, you know, 2/3 of a season's worth, or however long, of games that honestly don't matter.
Well, John Taylor, baseball writer for Sports Illustrated, thank you so much for joining us, and in particular for giving us that update from the All-Star Game. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And joining us now from St. Paul, Minnesota, is Chris Hine, sports analytics and enterprise reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. He's one of the reporters working on a Minneapolis Star Tribune series on the state of Major League Baseball. You can link to his article headlined "Major League Baseball Fans Turning Gray While Millennials Tuning Out." You can find that at our website at onpointradio.org. Chris Hine, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So I thought we got a good sort of primer for this hour from John Taylor. But jump in anywhere you want. Attendance is down. Millennials are turning away. What ails baseball in your view right now?
You know, it's a question that I think has multifaceted answer to it. I think there's several issues that are going on just besides the issues with pace of play and the game is too boring. One of the things in my piece that I found out in talking to people around baseball, including the president of the Twins, Dave St. Peter, is a major issue facing baseball right now is the marketing of its players. And they kind of look at the NBA as the model league in terms of building up the audience for their players, marketing the players. And all you have to do is kind of look at the social media following of various baseball players. You know, the Jose Altuve and Giancarlo Stanton, the reigning MVPs in the league, have a combined Twitter following of about 550,000 people. James Harden, the NBA's MVP, has 5.5 million.
And what's the main reason for that? Is it just because baseball isn't perceived as dynamic a game? Or is this really just not putting these athletes out on the Wheaties boxes aggressively enough?
You know, it's a very good question. I'm not sure that there's an exact answer, but I would say one thing is the culture of baseball lends itself to being a sport where you don't want to stand out, especially if you're a young player. I know Mike Trout, for instance, you know, the best player in the game, you know, for the last few years here, you know, he should be a bigger star.
Yep.
Maybe in another era, he would be a bigger star than he is right now. You know,
Chris Hine, hold that thought. We have to go to a break, but okay. I want to pick that up right after the break. Listeners, we're talking about the 2018 Major League Baseball season and the declining popularity of the game. You can join the conversation. Are you a diehard baseball fan, or is the sport struggling to keep your attention? We're going to take a short break. When we return, we'll pick up this conversation with Chris Hine, as well as your calls. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Show on, get paid, and all that thrill is gold. Only shooting stars break the mold. And all that thrill is gold. Only shooting stars break the mold.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
There's a new way to hear Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and all your favorite programs. Just ask your smart device to play NPR. Listen to your local station anytime, like this. Hey, smart device, play NPR.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking about why many sports fans are saying, I'll catch you later, to baseball. You can join the conversation. Is baseball still America's great pastime in your view? Or are the cost of parking, tickets, even hot dogs preventing you from getting out to the game? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Let's hear a little sound for the game to get us in the mood. The Boston Red Sox entered the All-Star break with the best record in baseball. They're on top of the American League East. They've won 12 of their last 13 games, including Sunday's victory, courtesy of Xander Bogaerts.
They're all loaded. High fly ball, deep into left center field.
Get out of here.
Way back it carries. The Red Sox walk it off in style.
In style, indeed. And this year's Home Run Derby was one for the record books. 221 home runs. It surpassed the previous high number of home runs at 203 in 2016. Star slugger Bryce Harper won the Home Run Derby in front of his hometown fans in Washington, D.C., and celebrated with his father on the field.
There it is!
Center field, and Bryce Harper has thrown his bat in the air and won the 2018 T-Mobile Home Run Derby, and he loves it.
I'm talking with Chris Hines, sports analytics and enterprise reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, about the Star Tribune series on the state of Major League Baseball. And Chris, let's just pick up where we were before the break. You were talking about the marketing of baseball players and how it's just maybe not up to par.
Yeah, and we were talking about Mike Trout and specifically why he isn't a bigger star when maybe in another age or another sport he might be a gigantic star. And I think part of it is the culture of baseball. And the culture of baseball is one in, you know, that kind of tampers individuality. It wants you to be part of the team. Don't disrespect the game. Don't stand out. Don't do anything flashy or showy. And so in some ways, I think a lot of the top players, they might shy away from opportunities that might gain them more exposure, more of a brand. But you know, I do think that ultimately the marketing problems might be secondary to the problems on the field. I do think that the pace of play, how boring the perception that baseball is what's really driving some concerns with attracting a younger audience for the game.
Mm. Chris Hines, stand by. I want to introduce J. Scott Smith. He's joining us now from New York. He's a reporter for The Griot, a news website geared toward African Americans. And Jay, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you.
And it's great to be here.
So you've been listening to this conversation. What do you think ails baseball? And you know, I'd like to go back, if we could. We started at the top of the hour with John Taylor just talking about all these home runs, all these strikeouts, which can be very exciting, but which means fewer balls in play. And it sort of affects the game as it's played on the field. I'll start with you, Jay. Is that a problem? To what extent is that a problem for this game?
It can be a problem if it becomes too predictable. Yeah. And I've been listening to the conversation, obviously, and some of it that gets brought up. I mean, it's funny now that we talk about there being too many strikeouts, because I can remember the commercial from the late 90s with Tom Glavine and Greg Maddux where they're saying chicks dig the long ball. And that was seen as the big issue, is there were too many home runs. Yeah. And now it's almost like it's an all or nothing type of thing where and I heard it mentioned earlier about social media. Baseball is not very social media friendly, despite the game having every opportunity to be social media friendly. When you look at the NBA, it's, and I spent a lot of time talking about the NBA, it's built on the big plays, the big three-pointer from Steph Curry, or the crazy dribble through the legs moves on the drives to the basket, or James Harden putting a move on the young man from the Clippers earlier this year that left him sitting on the ground. Those are the ooh and ah type of plays, and that's the kind of climate we're in. The NBA has embraced that. The NFL has embraced it with the big hits and the touchdowns and the big-time plays. But a lot of it does come back to baseball almost being seen as stodgy. I grew up playing baseball myself. It was the first sport that I fell in love with before anything else back in Detroit. And it is an interesting climate now that everything is set up for social media, to be social media friendly, instant access. Where you think of the biggest baseball play that I've seen in the social media age was Jose Bautista hitting the home run against the Texas Rangers a couple of years ago with the huge bat flip and the crowd reaction. That was maybe the biggest pop on social media I had seen for a baseball game, was something like that, where people crave those gifable moments, those 10-second clips that you can retweet or put on Facebook over and over again. Baseball, as has been mentioned, does have this kind of stodgy, don't upstage the team, don't be seen as too flashy, we're kind of old school. And I think that does harm the game, especially since even football, which at one point was really stodgy like that, has started to loosen up the reins a little bit on that sort of thing.
Interesting. We're going to talk about what Major League Baseball might be considering doing about that. But I want to get some callers in on this conversation. We've got a lot of them lined up. Teddy is calling from Dayton, Ohio. Teddy, it's good to have you. Go ahead. You're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Anthony. What I've noticed over the last few years as far as the declining interest. I've got several nieces and nephews that all enjoy the game, and they used to go with me as late as the 2000s when we were watching Votto really hit a lot, watching Phillips make excellent plays, and if we're lucky, seeing somebody like Corky Miller hanging around. And I grew up going to the Reds down even at Riverfront with my grandparents, and it was a pastime. Hmm. I played Little League. But the young people that I'm hanging out with in my family, as much as they enjoy the dynamics of the game, can't stand to go to Great American Ballpark just because of the time consumption, the money consumption, and it's just a little too slow. They're watching other games on their devices while they're in the stands waiting for something to happen on the field. So.
Got it, Teddy. So, a little too slow, and maybe a game for another time almost. John and Chris, related to what we heard Teddy say there from Ohio, here's a comment from our website. Jazzo Turner writes, 162 games at over 3 hours a shot, while most people barely have time to drink a cup of coffee in the morning before working, taking care of kids, worrying about bills, health care, etc. Baseball is a great game, but this is a throwback to an era when time, rather than information, was the coin of the realm of leisure. Many of us can no longer traffic in the pleasures of free time. It's a sad comment, but I'll come back to you, Chris. What do you think? I mean, is this just a sport that is out of step with the time? We heard Jay, for example, talking about it's not social media friendly. You know, you need this stuff that you can kind of click and access quickly.
Yeah, I agree with everything that's been said. One point I would make: Sports Illustrated recently did a study in which they calculated that this season the average time between something happening, a ball being in play in a game, was 3 minutes and 45 seconds. That's an entire song. You can listen to a song on your phone, and before anything is going to happen on the field of play. And in my piece, one of the people I quoted was a sociology professor from the University of Minnesota named Douglas Hartman. And he told me, you know, football, for instance, takes sometimes longer than a baseball game. But people are interested by a football game because there's the promise of action. You know that in a football game, every 40 seconds, they're going to line up and something is going to happen. Yeah. In baseball, there is no guarantee that something is going to happen. It could happen at any moment, and it might not happen for several minutes. So that's what really drives people away from the game. It's not so much that the games take forever. It's just that the games take forever plus not a lot of stuff is happening. If stuff was happening on the field, you might see more people tune in. But we're in an age right now where we're having more strikeouts than ever, and you know, more home runs than ever. But it's really the strikeouts that are really driving this inaction on the field.
You know, Jay, one of my fondest memories, and I have to admit, because of my working schedule, I don't have a lot of time to go to baseball games. I always think about it in terms of, do I have the time? Do I have the time? Not to mention the money. But some of my fondest memories of baseball games is going with a group of people and just kind of relaxing and spending most of the time talking to folks. You know, it's a social thing. And when something happens on the field, okay, that's a benefit. But I didn't necessarily go to see, you know, two lines of football players line up and do something every 40 seconds. There was that atmosphere of just letting things kind of play out.
I always think of the first baseball game I went to was, I was 4 years old, so that'd be 1983, and it was a game at Tiger Stadium in Detroit between the Tigers and the Baltimore Orioles. And I'd never seen a baseball diamond before like that. So my first memory is seeing the field of Tiger Stadium open up from the center field bleachers and just enjoying the camaraderie there and being there with my mom and friends of ours from a school group and just getting to just to spend time together. And this is a different age. I mean, that's 35 years ago, which I'm kind of dating myself here. That's 35 years ago. So it's a lot more leisurely of a game than, you go to a football game, you're expecting to see touchdowns, big hits. NBA game, you're expecting to see the runs, where teams like Golden State, where they go on these crazy runs and these dunks and these really fast-paced play. When you think about, they talk about the pace of play in baseball, a baseball game is really not that much longer than a lot of NFL games. It's just that you feel you get more out of an NFL game because it's constant motion. It's constantly moving. And with baseball, it's hard, which is crazy to think of, because football, the players, you don't always see their faces, but you know who they are. Baseball, you know, you see these guys out here, and at times they're like anonymous faces in the crowd. So when people go to these games, they're there for the atmosphere, but in 2018 as opposed to 1983 or 1993 or 2003, going there just to spend time and hang out, that's not enough to move the needle with a lot of people these days.
Yeah. Let's take some more calls. Keith is calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Keith, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Hi, Anthony. How you doing?
Very well. What's up?
I'm thinking basically like beyond analytics and pace of play and the whole buttoned up image of baseball, I think Major League Baseball should reinvest back into the inner cities to attract black youth back to baseball. I think there's a correlation between the decline of popularity of baseball and the decline of the black athlete in baseball. I think undeniably no one moves the meter like the black athlete. And I think it would bring back popularity back to the game. I mean, that's just the way I feel.
Keith, it's a great point. I'm glad you put it on the table. Let me ask my guests about that. Chris, let me go back to you. Not a lot of kids of color playing the game at young ages. And we know that, interest in the sport is directly related to whether or not you play it as a kid.
Absolutely. And Keith brings up a great point. You go back through the history of baseball and, you know, going back even before Jackie Robinson helped integrate the league, there was a large black following for baseball. And that's where a lot of fans came from. They are black fans. And it's remarkable to me that in this day and age that baseball hasn't done a better job of maintaining that fan base, because that's at the core of baseball. And I really do think that that's a severe problem. Mm. That it's something that has been discussed in the past 20 years or so. Baseball knows it's been a problem. We don't make a bigger deal of it in the media, but perhaps we should, because that is a significant portion of baseball's fan base that has just tuned out the game over the last couple of decades.
Yeah, what do you think, Jay? I mean, what's the way to get young African-American players back involved in this game?
Well, speaking as an African-American who played baseball, I can say that part of that is access.
Yeah.
And I recently spoke with Bob Kendrick, who runs the Negro League Museum out in Kansas City. And I've talked to him before about this, and he said a lot of the reasons and a lot of the ways that we lost a large amount of black players is even though I think it's now up to about 9.5%, which is still grossly low compared to what it was in the 1970s and 80s, when nearly a quarter of the league was African-American, is access to fields, access to equipment. Baseball is essentially becoming what hockey is, where if you're a baseball player, you can't just simply, unlike basketball, where you just kind of get shorts and maybe uniforms. You got to go uniforms. You got to go gloves, bats. If you're a catcher, you have catcher's equipment. You have specialized schools for pitchers and all these different things happening. And there's travel and there's fields. I go back to Detroit, for example, or I look around Philadelphia where I've worked the last few years. So many of these baseball diamonds in the inner cities, if you go to a baseball diamond on the west side of Detroit, as opposed to in Oakland County, which is 20 minutes north of there, and you look at the difference between the two, where you have fields that barely have, that have 3 foot high grass and no bases, and you can barely tell it's a baseball diamond. You go 15 minutes north past 8 Mile, you've got scoreboards, you've got 300 foot walls, you've got travel teams. And a lot of times it's about the access part of it too, because you don't see the little leagues, the police athletic leagues like they had in Detroit. I spoke with Ryan Howard when they opened a baseball academy under his name in Philadelphia. And we both sat and talked about how growing up we had players we looked up to, where I loved Ricky Henderson and Ozzie Smith and Ken Griffey Jr., where now you don't have that. And they lost a generation of black players. It's starting to slowly but surely come back. And you see it little by little with certain players and certain teams now, and guys like Andrew McCutchen. And I know there's a pitcher in Cincinnati, for example, Amir Garrett, who's a really good pitcher, or Billy Hamilton with the Reds and Mookie Betts with the Red Sox. You have these guys who are starting to now show that it's the resurgence of little by little of black players, but a lot of that is access. If you don't make the game accessible to us, and I'll just say it as a black man, to us, we're not going to show up. We're going to go play football, even though it's shown to be increasingly dangerous because of head injuries and everything. Or we're going to go play basketball because that's all we see are these guys playing basketball, and that seems to be the easiest, quote unquote, route to making it as a pro athlete.
Yeah, so my question, and I'll come back to you, Chris, for this. I mean, I think you mentioned that Major League Baseball is aware of this. What can they do? Are they talking about what can be done? I don't know, teaming up with cities and towns and funding fields, funding activities that would get more kids involved in this game? I mean, is that one of the roots? Yeah, go ahead.
They do have their RBI program, which is reviving baseball in inner cities. That's been around since the late 80s. And that's really what they've been the main outlet that they've been trying to use to revive the game. I do think that it's exactly right. It's a problem of access, and anymore to be an elite level athlete, it requires specialization, and it requires a lot of time and money poured into a kid to do things like travel leagues, to get the exposure out there. It's a burden. It's time consuming, and it's a lot of money, and it's a lot of money that people may not have. And that's a big thing in today's society, is that the cost of developing and nurturing a elite level athlete has gone way up from what it used to be a couple decades ago.
We're talking about the ways in which Major League Baseball may be striking out, and we're asking, can the MLB improve itself, make the game more accessible to black athletes, for example, to others? Maybe think about overwhelmingly high ticket prices and concession prices. We'll talk about that after the break. You can join the conversation. Is Major League Baseball outdated, too slow? How can the league market itself better to younger, more diverse audience? We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, host of the TED Radio Hour. And on our latest episode, we're exploring the causes and consequences of hatred, what makes it such a powerful force, and why some people feel its pull more deeply. Take a listen to the TED Radio Hour on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking about the future of Major League Baseball and what the game will look like in the coming years. You can join the conversation. Should Major League Baseball speed up the pace of play? How would they do that? What about rule changes? What about tradition and holding on to that? My guests are Chris Hine, sports analytics and enterprise reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and J. Scott Smith, a reporter with Griot. And gentlemen, I want to play a little bit of tape here. This comes from Oakland. When asked about the Athletics' poor attendance early in the season, season ticket holder John Westmoreland said his team only needed to do one thing to get more fans to come out, and that is win.
I see what the A's are trying to do, building for the future. But most people want to see a team that wins now. And if you're not winning now, they're likely not going to come out.
So, J. Scott Smith, we talked about this at the top of the hour with John Taylor, but this mismatch between a handful of very, very good teams, whether it's New York, Boston, Houston, Seattle, Los Angeles, and a whole bunch of teams that are playing, below 400. And one of the reasons is because a lot of these teams are rebuilding, and they just sort of throw in the towel and say, forget about this season, we're building for the future. But doesn't that create a problem, and what can be done about it?
It's kind of similar to and I've heard this mentioned earlier, it's kind of similar to the argument that's going on in NBA circles right now with the dearth of teams that are really, really good in the NBA. The difference is the NBA has always been kind of structured that way, where there's about seven or eight good teams at one time, and then the rest is filler. In baseball, it's really weird and cyclical. I come from two aspects where my team, the Tigers, they're kind of embarking on this rebuilding train because they spent the better part of this decade as a part of the Habs. And only until last year did they finally tap out and say, all right, look, we're starting this over. It is true. I mean, you factor in, obviously, the deficiencies with some of these teams where you look at the American League Central Division, where in the East you have the Yankees and the Red Sox back to what they almost always do. They're dominating. In the American League Central, up until about 3.5 weeks ago, the Detroit Tigers were a game under 500, and they were three games out of first place. That whole division right now is not good. Even the Cleveland Indians, the defending division champ, who were they were in the World Series 2 years ago, they weren't doing very well with four really bad teams behind them. Some of the issues with attendance are due to the weather, because you saw the swath of bad weather that was all over the Midwest and East Coast in March and April, where so many games were snowed out, rained out, and from everywhere from as far west as Minneapolis and Chicago all the way to Boston, New York, and D.C. It's... Winning always helps, but the way that the league is structured, and this might become a bit more of an issue when we get closer to the labor issues in the next couple of years when the collective bargaining agreement comes up because of all the issues with free agency and whatnot, is how do you mitigate this? Because unlike the NBA, where you can do what the 76ers did, for example, and be bad, historically bad in their case, for 3-4 years, and you build up draft picks and boom, these guys are instantly there and instantly good. In baseball, you can't do that because sometimes these draft picks either never pan out or it may be 5-6 years down the line before you start to see a guy show up after he works his way through the minors. I think with the way the league is set up right now, they need to... And I don't know if Manfred can address it because it has semi-worked for the Astros and the Cubs, but then you have, as I heard earlier, the Cincinnati Reds have just been kind of wallowing bad for so long that perhaps if there is another aspect of it, either figure out a way to maybe incentivize not losing, if you could come up with something like a draft lottery, for example, like the NBA has, where it isn't always a guarantee if you have the worst record, you're going to get the best pick of the litter, I guess, in terms of players. That's kind of a hard thing to figure out. You can't do anything about the weather. It is what it is. You're not going to shorten the season because that's costing too much money. I would say look at maybe incentivizing not losing as opposed to saying, hey, if we know we're not in it, let's just go out here and drop 110 games and wait 3 years and we'll be back to you.
All right. Let's go to Stella, who's calling from Canton, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston. Stella, good to have you.
Hi, Anthony. Thank you for taking my call. I'm not an avid watcher of baseball, but as a spectator, I've noticed that watching baseball on TV versus other sports like hockey and football is a lot more slow. When you're at a game, getting that fever is when you actually go to a game. Kids are being bombarded by technology. Attention spans are lower. They like to be engaged. And I think that, coupled with the fact that when I was in high school many years ago, we could get a ticket for $14. With less than $20, we could spend the day at Fenway Park. It has become an unaffordable American pastime. And I think what you're seeing is the result of decades of kids who have lost interest because they do not go to the games. You cannot afford to go to the games. It's become something that is for the rich and famous, and it is completely lost and unaffordable by middle or lower classes.
Stella, I really appreciate you putting this point on the table, and we're going to pick this up in a moment. I want to get one more call from Steve, who's calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Go ahead, Steve. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Anthony. Gentlemen, thank you for taking my points. I have a couple of points. I do agree baseball needs to engage the African-American. The largest crowd in Wrigley Field history at a ball game was Jackie Robinson's first game over 70 years ago. But what makes baseball special is the pace of play, is that anything can happen at any given moment. And I think it's a mistake to try to pander to the fragmented attention span and the surge for instant gratification, because it's contrary to the nature of the game. The NFL is also on the decline. We've had conversations on this very program about that. And the NFL, I mean, a football game, 3-hour football game has about 11 minutes of actual action, as does a 3-hour baseball game. And also the analytics, the statistics, they make your head swim. The average person that is not versed in all the alphabet soup and number crunching that goes on, I mean, you need a statistics degree to follow along with it.
All right, Steve, you put a bunch of things on the table that I want to talk to Chris and Jay about. Chris, let me start with you. Stella called, though, and made this point, and we hear this a lot. It is expensive to go to a baseball game, even though I know baseball teams will tell you that they have these programs. You can line up at certain times of the week. You can, you know, get tickets at a discounted price, et cetera, et cetera. I know the Red Sox do that. But at the end of the day, if you want to get to a game, you've got to spend a lot of money. Is Major League Baseball addressing this in any way at all? Because it's a complaint that a lot of people have.
This seems to be low on the priority list.
I
know, exactly, right? on my story this week, a lot of the comments underneath mentioned how expensive it was to go park, to buy the tickets, to get your food, to get your drinks. You know, you really have to save. You really have to save up for it. You have to save up and make it a night out. So it's a huge problem for baseball right now. I will say one thing going in at least the Twins' favor here in Minneapolis, and I tend to push back a little bit against this narrative that's coming from baseball that the weather is driving the attendance down. Here in Minnesota, 63% of their attendees this year at Target Field were 40 and younger. I was surprised to learn that. I was a little stunned that it was that big of a chunk of their audience was 40 or younger. And I also look at the Twins' attendance overall, and they're just slightly down from where they were a year ago, and they haven't been very good this year. But you look at a place like Toronto, where there's a dome, a retractable dome, and they are down by over 500,000 year over year this year. So I tend to push back against the narrative that it's that it's all that the weather really had a big impact. Because believe me, we had some terrible weather here in Minnesota in April. Yeah. We had a blizzard that wiped out three straight games. So I do think the competitiveness plays a big part in it, because Toronto hasn't been very good this year. They have a dome where people can be heated and sit down and enjoy the games, and still they're not coming.
Yeah. Jay, I want to sort of pick up Steve's point about our caller, Steve, about the pace of play. And I know that there's a lot of concern about this, and that Major League Baseball is considering, I don't know, you know, what to do about too much time between pitches, too many pitching changes, lineup changes. There's even a debate about, you know, should defensive shifts somehow be limited, because that sort of reduces some of the excitement on the field. What do you think? Does baseball need to think seriously about rule changes?
I mean, the one of the rule changes they made that I'm still kind of iffy about was the whole intentional walk rule, when you throw the four fingers up, the guy just walks to first base. You don't even bother throwing the four pitches, which at times has proven to be an integral part of the game. If a guy throws a wild pitch during an intentional walk, guys have scored. I've seen where players like Miguel Cabrera have swung and gotten base hits off of an intentional walk when they surprise somebody. That takes part of it out of the game. I think changing things like the number of mound visits, for example, where you can only go to the mound a certain amount of times in a game, not just in an inning, that's negligible. It's not going to take a ton of time out of a game, because umps will run out there and break things up. The defensive shifts, where I know Joe Maddon may not appreciate hearing them trying to get rid of defensive shifts, considering that is his bread and butter with running pitchers into the outfield for one play and everything. I don't know if you really can. There's so many things you can do to slow up the pace of play. A lot of it has to just go back to guys being able to put the ball in play and move the game along faster, because some of these games go 3-4 hours, but they're 10-9 games and they're exciting. Some of these games only go an hour and 59 minutes. They're 2-1 games, but they're flying by because of great pitching. I would almost look at it as the caliber of play. If that picks up, the pace of play, even if the games are the same length, that's how you get it better. I mean, I heard him mention something about advanced analytics. I was never big into it initially, but now I get it. And my favorite advanced analytic is the one where it's batting average on balls in play. I love that one, because it's such a it tells you how good of a hitter a guy is. Even if he doesn't get on base, he's going to put the ball in play. He's a good hitter. Miguel Cabrera was good at this. Victor Martinez was good at this. I know Mike Trout was very good. Is very good at this. If you're able to get the ball in play, it speeds up it speeds up the game, the perception of it being faster, and it also lends to it. But this is the idea. You're never going to take a lot of those elements out of the game without completely radically changing it and making it look weird, like putting a pitch clock, like a shot clock on a pitcher, things like that. It's about helping the actual game get better, that these guys need to be better hitters or these pitchers need to figure out what to do before I'm trying to impose limits on shifts. I don't mind the defensive shift because sometimes guys beat the shift and find ways around it. It's just about letting players get better on the field, and that will help the game speed up far more than changing the rules.
Let's go to a caller. Let's go to Memory. She's calling from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Go ahead, Memory. Good to have you.
Thanks for taking my call. Hi, Anthony. I was just talking, you guys mentioned earlier about the cost of Little League, and I was also going to talk about the age. I have a 12-year-old player, and we do travel ball, and when we do that, we're paying, you know, $100 a month to a team. We're paying for expenses of travel and tournaments and, you know, all, 2 to 3 different uniforms for them to play with. And then on top of that, you add in $60 an hour so that they can be, you know, the top pitcher or the top swing, you know, have the best swing. And it gets almost, it pushes a kid out of baseball. But yet, if you don't play baseball like that, like my 9-year-old went to soccer for 3 years after playing baseball when he was 6, when he decided, hey, I want to pick up in the fall and play a spring sport. We couldn't find a team for him to play with because, oh, hey, guess what? He's too old now. He hasn't played long enough. He's not good enough at his age. And you get a lot of coaches that want to take these kids to, you know, Little League World Series, you know, or even if you're hometown baseball, they still, it's about the win and less about the play. And I think we're pushing kids out of the enjoyment of baseball.
Boy, well, that's a big one. Chris Hine, I mean, listening to Memory there, give me your response to that, because no doubt youth sports is sometimes treated so seriously, and I'm wondering how that affects overall interest in the sport.
So one of the things that Rob Manfred likes to hang his hat on, that baseball is in a good place, is
this
participation
numbers. This is the commissioner of Major League
the
Baseball.
The commissioner of baseball, right. Yes. Yeah. So he cites a study from the Sports and Fitness Industry Association that says 14.7 million people played baseball at least one time. The latest year for this study was 2016. That's a year-over-year increase for 3 consecutive years. So he really likes to tout that number and says baseball's on really good footing. You know, we have such a large base of people playing the game, young people playing the game. But if you delve a little deeper into the numbers, you'll notice that 4.5 million of those people play the game between the ages of 6 and 12. If you go 1 year later and break the age group into 13 through 17, that 4.5 million shrinks to 2.5 million. So between 12 and 13, kids are leaving the game. And I think it's exactly for these reasons, because it becomes a case of specialization. It becomes a case of, you know, travel ball, expensive, a lot of time. All those reasons are chasing kids out of the game. Now, baseball will say that if a kid even plays it once between, you know, the ages of 6 and 12, that's good, you know, that's good for his prospect of being a fan later in life. But if you're losing kids from that 12 to 13-year-old range, how much are you really going to them hooked in?
Yeah, that's a problem. That's a real problem. J. Scott Smith, we literally have 30 seconds left. I want to give these last 30 seconds to you. And talk to us as a baseball fan. What are you excited about for the second half of this season? What are you watching?
Kind of watching to see where this goes in the American League East with the Red Sox and Yankees. It would be interesting to see what the Astros do. Can they continue this pace in the second half? And also looking at a team like Seattle, for example, which is kind of, they've almost taken Detroit's place and kind of raising up in the league. I want to see how the American League shakes out. The National League, who knows?
Who knows?
It's hard to figure from year between the Dodgers getting Manny Machado, but that's another conversation.
All right. Listen, J. Scott Smith, reporter with Griot. I really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And John Taylor, baseball writer for Sports. Oh, sorry. No, Chris Hine. Sorry. Sports analytic and enterprise reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Chris Hine, thank you so much.
Thank you, Anthony.
I also wanted to say thanks to John Taylor, who joined us at the top of the hour. Listeners, thank you for your calls. Keep the conversation going. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.